Welcome to Coaching Conversations, a weekly discussion of topics related to coaching and sport of volleyball at all levels. I'm your host, John Foreman, author of the CoachingVB.com blog and co-developer of the Volleyball Coaching Wizards Project. Let's dive right in. Welcome to episode 17 of the podcast. It is January 30th, 2021, as I record this on a cold, snow-covered winter's day in Buffalo. I think a few flakes are coming down outside the window, but that's what you get this time of year. Today is the day between my second and third practices with the men's team here at Medi College. It's been a bit of a slow start, unfortunately. Had only four guys eligible to practice on Wednesday, which was our first session, because of a combination of guys still needing to get their COVID tests. One guy needing to get his clearance after having had COVID. Another guy needing to get an extra class added to become academically eligible as a full-time student. So a variety of things kept the numbers down to four. One of the guys was able to come back for last night's session. So we got the number up to five, and thanks to another guy who's going to be available because he unfortunately had to work the first two sessions. He's going to be free tomorrow on Sunday as I record this. And that will get us to at least six, maybe seven, hopefully. There's another guy out there that has been sick lately. From the way he described it, it sounded like he started off testing positive for COVID and then ended up getting strep. And he's just been on his back for a few weeks now, and is just kind of slowly starting to get himself back into some kind of health. So hopefully we'll get him back into the squad here pretty soon and training with us. There's at least one guy who's looking to come out as a trialist. He's going through the paperwork process right now to make sure he's got his medical clearance and his NCAA compliance stuff all sorted out. So we're not going to have 12 this year. That's, unless suddenly the several guys pop out of the woodwork that we're not expecting. But we'll at least hopefully have enough guys to field the team for the matches that we're going to play. Right now, we're a little under a month from when we play our first one, which is going to be, I think, February 24th is the date for that. It's going to be in here in Buffalo, across town, at a school that used to be in our conference in the AMCC with us at DeUville. They've moved up to Division II this year. And we're going to play them in fellow Division II school, Damon, who first started their men's program, I think, 3 years ago. And their head coach actually was an assistant coach at Medi several years back, to where he got his coaching start, in fact. So those two will be our non-conference opposition. We're only allowed to have two of them this year, unless we drop a conference match, which is still possibly the case. So there might be an opportunity to add another one in there somewhere. But anyway, the conference schedule is supposed to start mid-March. So we've got about 6 weeks before we get to that to get our fitness where it needs to be and get some the team dynamic worked up and develop some of the aspects of the offense that I want to get worked in based on what I saw of how the team played last year. So work to do, but at least we're getting it started. And in this first stage, we're only allowed to go basically every other day to allow for recovery in the first 7-day period. And then for the next 14 days after that, we can go five times. And then from there, we're into normal regular season type mode with the 20-hour restrictions and that sort of thing. So getting it going. I found out the initial practices for the women yesterday as I record this on Friday. Again, they're going to have a similar sort of ramp up as the guys are having right now. So they're going to have their first practice on the 24th of February. And that's March is going to be crazy, people. The women are most likely going to be doing a Monday, Wednesday, Friday early practice just because the way their class schedules work out. It's like probably a 6:30 to 8:30 or a 7 to 8:30 type situation. Because fortunately, none of them have classes before 9 o'clock. So it's going to make for certain days that are going to be quite long for me, because I'll have early morning practice with the women and evening practice with the guys, or matches with the guys in a few cases. I don't know if I'm going to have any days off during the week in September. Plus, the teaching thing got started this week. Did my first session teaching sports marketing for those who may not have heard already. Did my first in-person class on Wednesday this past week, and Fridays we're doing online. So I did that session yesterday. When I got through the material I wanted to get through, but it was definitely a difficult experience not having kind of the direct feedback of being able to look at your audience. Because our platform isn't like a Zoom platform where you see, the images of people. It's pretty much just presentation mode only, kind of sort of thing. I mean, there might be options. Well, there are options to bring people in, and hopefully, I'll be using them. There's still a lot for me to learn. And actually, this weekend, I'm wrapping up the 4-week course that I've been taking to learn how to use the platform that we use for these online classes, which is called Blackboard. And that's been an interesting process along the way too. So lots going on, that's for sure. As for everything else, we're just getting on. But to get to this particular week's podcast, my guest is Ruth Nelson, who's one of my volleyball coaching wizards interviewees from a while back. I think in 2016 was when we actually met for the first time, after I had moved to go coach at Midwestern State, because Ruth is based in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I saw her there. She was quite helpful for me getting Danielle Scott to come do a fundraising dinner conversation sort of thing my second year at Midwestern, when we were raising money to go to Buenos Aires. So we've coordinated a lot of stuff. And if you're somebody who watches the weekly buzz that I do with master coaches, Ruth is involved in that as well. So the thing we talk about in this discussion, though, is Ruth was invited to take part in a mostly European-based talk about youth volleyball, what they generally call mini volleyball. And that when we in the States hear mini volleyball, we might be thinking small courts, lower nets, kind of dimensional sort of things. And to be fair, there is that element of it in Europe, but mini volleyball tends to just mean youth volleyball, in large part because they don't play 6-on-6 for the younger kids. That comes quite a bit later than we tend to do in the US, which I think is a major shortcoming of our youth system. But that's a discussion for another day. So anyway, Ruth was asked to do I guess you could kind of like mini conference or seminar or something like that with four of the coaches a short while ago. So the discussion that we have is about, what that was all, how that all ran, and her thoughts on it, both in terms of the content and the presentation. So I think you'll find it interesting. And be sure to check the show notes, because there's a lot of references and things that Ruth makes that you might want to chase up and follow the links for and get more information on. All right. So with that, we'll let you get into this conversation, and we'll check back with you. Enjoy. Why don't we start with you kind of describing what this event was?
Okay. Well, I actually received a messenger chat from your cohort, Mark Lebedew. And he asked me, would I ever be interested? They need a speaker for this particular event on mini volley. And would I be interested? And I said, absolutely, I'd be interested. Not knowing, what the content was, but, the ability to be able to share what I've been doing for the last 20 years, you know, well, one of the projects or many projects. And so he shared my name and Christoph with the CEO of Volleyball Academy Poland actually said, hey, let's jump on. And I guess it was like an interview to see whether, you know, he wanted to consider me or not. And so that lasted about an hour. And at the end of the session, he was like this. And I said, Christoph, are you okay? And he said, oh, no, I'm just, he says, Ruth, I'm just blown away. He said, I didn't realize you're doing all this virtual stuff and all the age groups and all. Would you be interested in doing it? And I said, absolutely, yes. But, I mean, when is it? What's the time frame? You know, it's. And so we finally figured that out, you know, it's, you know, 5-6 hours later, which means you have to get up early, you know, and I says, well, what is it exactly? And what would you like me to speak on? He said, well, you've just kind of reviewed what you can speak on. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And then as I thought about it, I thought, wow, you know what? He's going to ask some other people in the same space. And I thought, wonderful. I mean, this is really going to be because I really, you know, I do, you know, have a lot of groups around the world that respond to me on different things that I may be engaged in. But I thought it was interesting. He says, yes, we're going to. I said, okay, is it going to be pre-recorded, recorded, you know, exactly. And I've really enjoyed the live side of it. You know, I've done the pre-recorded side, you know, with 5 or 6 events. And he said, well, no, we're going to pre-record and then you'll come on and you'll have a 50-minute Q&A. And I thought, okay, you know, however they want to do it. But then he said, it's not on Zoom. And I thought, oh, no. Okay, first of all, I've already done one on Google and that one, I couldn't even figure out how to change the virtual background. They never even saw me the whole time. And then someone said, Microsoft, what is it? Microsoft Word Meets or something like that. And I go, oh no, I can do Skype, but I really have enjoyed Zoom with the flexibility of being able to change the background and, you know, have a second screen because I think that really gives people a more lifelike, like they're really there participating, even mm-hmm. though it may not be live on the court. And then I told him, I said, look, I'm not on the court. I'm not going to be able to do any live except I'll have one of my students who's at the time she was 8 years old and her mom had been training with me since March in BYOP. And I said, I would like her to be engaged. And then at first, he, you know, he kind of thought, no, I don't know, you know, and I said, we're going to be doing it on Zoom. So it's, you know, he's going to record it on Zoom, but the event, you know, was not. Okay. So then I said, okay, how many speakers so forth? It kind of went on. And he told me a little bit about, you know, what we would do and when it would be. And then it got postponed. And then that was great because guess what? I didn't have to do my pre-recording as soon. So then we recorded in December and then the event actually aired on Sunday. I think they were, it was called Mini Volley Congress and it basically was represented by 5 countries and it had to do predominantly with youth in training. However, one of the speakers from Italy, he actually talked about all levels. He talked about young kids. He went all the way up to his pro team that he's coaching. So everybody was bringing a different topic, but it was, you know, dealing with kids and, you know, the whole idea is mini volley. Now it's interesting to me. I've never really paid much attention to what mini volley is. Except when people talk about it, I think of it as 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, and everybody kind of does a modification of that. Right. And I said, I'm not really doing that. I'm really doing training and so forth. And is it okay if I do it like that? And he said, oh no, what you're doing with parents and kids and virtually and all that. He said, people in that would register would get a chance to see someone who's really doing that with younger kids in the United States, because mm-hmm. everybody sees on the internet what everybody's doing with the challenges and so forth. So anyhow, that's kind of the overview of it. And I can tell you that what the interesting thing though, okay, so the Congress started on Sunday. I was first up at 8:00. So you go from 8 to 1, everybody gets their hour and everybody gets 15 minutes. However, there's a chat Well, I could not figure out how to do the chat in English. So they were translating for me. But guess what? Halfway into Remco, who is from the Netherlands, I figured out how to do it. So I'm chatting away and everybody's saying, okay, Ruth knows now how to do the English chat. So it was hilarious in a way, but I mean, I wish that I could have, you know, chatted during the session because it was pre-recorded because, you know, people, it's interesting. We talk about the generation of wanting immediate response. Well, coaches almost like when they put something in the chat, they want you to answer right away. They don't want to wait.
Yeah.
So guess what? They had to wait. But anyhow, so I learned how to do that. And so I kicked off in the morning at 8 o'clock. They had it pre-recorded. But the interesting thing is once the session started, Christoph did a little beginning, but he has his own club and he has his own program and his own academy. So this was the first Congress they had ever done like this. And I think it's the first one worldwide. And it was open to anybody. And then the key is 5 languages. So what you do is you take the link that's in the chat, you click on it, you go to YouTube, and you pick the language you want of those 5 languages. And then on the sidebar, it's got your language. There you go. Uh-huh. It's all, if I want it in English, I'm watching Remco in English. I'm watching Christoph in English. So it's unbelievable. I don't know exactly how they did that, but it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. So, you know, you got questions and then Christoph basically, you know, ended up asking me the questions. But mine was really training youth for the future and utilizing an innovative kids-centered approach. That was my title. And basically what I did was I went through some of the programs that I'm doing. And then I told them how it was important to have a program that was without parents because sometimes parents can't be there. Or sometimes coaches, you know, they might not like them there. So then I went to Go Kids and then I said, okay, now what do you got to do? You got to develop some certification programs. So then we talked about certification programs, but we also said, how do you have online courses? So I talked about the 2 online courses that I've had. So it was almost like I looked at it like this. If you are going to have to teach volleyball, what are the options that you have to look for? You have to look at how do you get, you know, everybody's jumping all over the place. You know that to learn everything. They go here and learn how to kick a goal. They learn here and do a corner kick. And, you know, it's like Danielle calling me and say, Ruth, I'm teaching soccer. And I know that you taught soccer in college. And I said, oh, you're asking me because I did some clinics with Dr. Pepper and Pele. And she goes, well, yeah, I know you did. And you have some friends. And I said, Danielle, this is what you do. G-O-O-G-L-E. She goes, you're telling me to Google and watch videos. And I said, yeah, you need to do that. So my thought is that if I could kind of put this in a nutshell so that PE, because you're really talking about it, everywhere in the world except here, PE teachers actually have degrees in physical education. And it's usually exercise physiology, anatomy, kinesiology, and most of their coaches do compared to here. Used to be that way, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It used to be that way.
Yeah. And it's too bad because you actually learn so much. But so I wanted to put it in perspective to basically put everything. So one of their teachers could say, okay, you got online course. And you know what? When you pay $9.99 for an online course, John, that's pretty inexpensive for something that you get all the skills and the keywords and all that. And I thought, you know, we really do have to have it developed. And, you know, Art of Coaching did both of my online courses. And then I did the home training program series and everybody says, oh my goodness, Ruth, how did you get this out in time for COVID? I go, no, this has been out since 2018. And they said, why is that? And I said, because what does a 10 and under kid or matter of fact, maybe a 14, a 15, a 16 say to you, hey coach, what do I need to practice on before next week? Well, I needed a program where they could go and go by progressions, have charts, watch videos, answer questions, watch the video, check off that they did it every week. And I felt like that was important. So my presentation was really geared around that. Then I ended up pretty much talking about what I'm doing with a virtual gym, which is really encompassing everything. So a PE teacher here, which a lot of them you know, a lot end up teaching PE, you know, and they may be a math teacher or somebody like that. And they might want to know those basic fundamentals. So I put everything in the library. I put everything online course, and I put all the certification. I put the programs. I did, you know, all, and you can pick. You want to watch all these things and their overview and all this, they're free. You know, you want more in depth, then I'll put in depth. But that's probably going to be a second quarter thing. We're just now working on the website side of it. And then I got to answer my Q&A, but after the fact and a little bit delayed. And then up next was a Dutch coach.
Before you go on to him, one thing that I think is worth bringing up right here is in what, for listeners,
okay,
in the last episode where I was talking with Alex Porter on mentorship, one of his to-do things that he came up with as we were talking, mm-hmm, was to engage a coach over there in England about developing programming for PE teachers in the, uh-huh, school system there, because essentially they're the ones that are teaching volleyball,
uh-huh,
to grade school kids in England.
Absolutely.
And about needing all the tools you're just talking about.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, what are the cues that you use and how do you structure things? And he was saying we have a decided lack of content for those people who are, I mean, volleyball for them is a 6-week module as part of their,
right,
you know, calendar.
Yeah.
So what can we do to help develop them? Because there's a coach over there who I actually met when I was in England in 2019.
Uh-huh.
At that time, he was the England youth national team coach, I think. Not okay. The junior national team, youth national team coach. I don't know if he still is that, but apparently he's been a PE teacher for years and years. And so Alex was like, I need to get him to work on this to develop something for the PE teachers. So I can tell him to talk to Ruth Nelson because she's already got something built for you.
Well, you know, when I first started out and I figured it out 2000, okay, that's like 20 years ago. I started to specialize in, started 12s and then 10s and then Ebony. I started Ebony in 4.5. She was in my first group in 2003 when we presented at the ABCA convention.
That's Ebony Nwanebo for those, yes, people who don't know the reference.
And she's playing in the Pro League.
Yep.
And was,
which starts,
and was at
in
USC
a few weeks,
and finished up at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it was interesting. I'll never forget Andy Banikowski walking past me, who used to be the head coach at UCLA. He walked past me in 2003 at ABCA that was here in Dallas. And he goes, Ruth, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do that with young kids. I'm just happy you're doing it.
You know, I was at that ABCA.
Really?
I was a...
You weren't at my demonstration.
I was a, what do you call it? An exhibitor.
Exhibitor?
An exhibitor. For the, what did we call it? It was a passing target that's suspended on the net. Precision passer. That's the name that I gave it.
Oh.
Because there was a period of time there in the 2000s where I developed, patented, and had produced this net suspended target.
Uh-huh.
And realized real quick I didn't want to be in that business. But there's a few hundred of them floating around the world, so most of the U.S., but there was,
well,
a few that
I
went
think
overseas.
Too, John, you know, when you think about it, there's not a lot of coaches that see the satisfaction that I see in training young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it all comes back to the fact is what my background is like. Because I think your normal player who played on the national team or was assistant coach of the national team, or, you know, collegiate coach and all those things that I've done. Most, I don't think really, unless you've had your own kids and they've grown up through a youth system, I don't think most coaches want to have that kind of patience. I think coaches have patience, but I don't think that they want necessarily have that much patience for that long a period of time.
Yeah. Well, you've kind of had a reverse career to the one people typically think of, because most people they'll start coaching like 12 and unders,
right?
And they'll get more experience and they'll start working up their way up the ladder with the age groups, and maybe they'll start coaching 18s, and maybe they'll start thinking about high school coaching and college coaching, uh-huh, and moving up that way. You were in the national team. You're coaching professional teams. You're coaching high level NCAA teams and AIAW teams. and then started working down the age ladder.
Well, you know what? After I learned the demands of certain age level, I said, I told this to Russ Rose at Penn State because he was in my badminton class at George Williams College. I said, Russ, when you see I'm working down an age, you know that age is getting difficult. And each year he'd say, Ruth, now you're at what? I said, well, I'm doing, I got a text from him today. I'm doing fours now.
Well, so, even, well, we first met, what, 20? I think we first met in 2016.
Yeah.
At that point, you were kind of like eights and tens.
Yeah.
But you were even saying to me at that point, like, yeah, eventually I'll be moving.
No, but the nice thing is if I've got him at three and four and I move up with him, like the, I've got four that I've, well, really three. One that's a junior now, and I've had her for 9 years. One that's a sophomore that I've had since she was 3.5 years old. Mm-hmm. And one that's a sophomore that I've actually had for 8 years. So, but they've come up, you know, like Jaden came up at 3.5 years old when it was Volley Kids. Then I changed it to BYOP. And then she goes, Ruth, you know what? I love it. I love it. I move into different areas because I get different t-shirts. Oh, well, anyhow, that was
all right,
great.
Yeah. All right. So who was the presenter after?
Okay. So then we had Remco. And he's from the Netherlands, and the interesting is he did games, movements with boys and girls together. He did some throwing exercises, hitting. You've seen a lot of his videos, and it's called Action Volley. Mm-hmm. And it's like he calls it a non-standard concept of training kids in the Netherlands.
Okay.
And
did he refer to action types, just out of curiosity?
Action what?
Action types.
I don't know that.
Maybe not explicitly, because that was something I was exposed to also on that 2019 trip when I spent a little time in the Netherlands.
It might have been a spinoff because now he's not a coach by trade.
Okay.
But he's also a CEV lecturer, and CEV has a school project that they do throughout CEV Confederation European Community. So they basically do their, like us, we have USA Volleyball.
Right.
And he has his action volleyball program as part of that, as long as, and also with another one of the speakers. But he did bouncing balls. He said he started like 60 kids 3 years ago, and he has over 200.
Wow.
You know, but they use all different size balls. They use balloons, you know, and it's a lot of, they do some tug of warring stuff. They do, if you watch it, just click in action volley and you'll see him jumping, touching all kinds of stuff. And it was, I think, the one nice thing about teaching is that you have the ability to be able to create what you want and you feel is important. And I think that the nicest thing is that this allowed me to say, you know what? These guys, these four guys are very passionate about exactly what they're doing. And it doesn't matter that all four of them, they're really, yeah, there's some similarities, but the overall thread, like you would say, is enthusiasm. They love the kids. They want to really give opportunities to all ages, and they want them to be able to enjoy the sport. Right. And everybody had their different philosophies about him. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting because I had already, you know, I had done some following on a couple of these guys prior to, and two of them I hadn't, but you know, over the last month I have. So I got a chance to really kind of look at it. And then the second one that was up, he was a Belgian coach. He's also a innovator, and he also is a CEV lecturer. And he started Start to Volley. And what it is his title was Volley at Home, Stay Positive, Volleyball training during the pandemic. So he created 20 some 30 some videos on, and he demonstrated everything, and he admitted he was 41 years old and he could hardly even get up the next day. But he was volleying one, two, on your head, this, bounce the tennis ball, do this, take the badminton shuttle, throw it, put it in the thing, toss it, take your bucket at home. He had a pretty good area at home to be able to do all this stuff.
Yeah, I must
have. But he was very energetic. He spoke English, so did Remco. And so, you know, I didn't need a translator for that. But I think that the one thing that he is, he's a teacher, you know, again, I found there's three of them that are teachers of the four, and that's their real job. And we're talking PE teachers. Mm-hmm. So they are thinking about the masses.
Right.
So he's thinking, okay, what can they do at home? And they did challenges. And actually, they're all on YouTube, you know. And he showed a bunch of it, and he talked about how he got started and, you know, what he does with his own club. And they really develop, you know, I couldn't believe he demonstrated everything. I started watching it before I knew that he was speaking. And I thought, look, this guy is doing all this stuff. He's a former professional player. He's doing tennis balls this and bouncing a ball left. And, you know, everything that we do, or should I say we did when I was in elementary school, what do? You skip rope, right? Yep. You put down cones. You put down all the dots now. We never had dots. We had chalk, you wrote, right? Yeah. Everybody had big old colored, everybody had different color chalk. And then I remember in elementary school, someone stole my pink chalk and I wasn't very happy. So they did all of these with the cones and this and touching this and all of those things. He had all of those in his garage or area that he could do so that he could completely create a program where Belgium right now is completely locked down.
Right.
Yep. So they are, they, this was perfect for them. Actually, I'm actually going to do a, I'm going to be part of his webinar for Belgium in March. So okay. It was fun to meet him. And he also got me hooked up with the CEB, and they've already asked if I'd like to be part of their program. So I'm going to say this, networking is worth a million things. I could list them all, but the one thing is this, the exchange of ideas, and people love people who like to share. Yeah. And it was obvious with all of these guys, they like to share.
Yeah. The piece of advice for everybody listening, go out and engage with other coaches. It's never a bad thing. Even if you disagree with them, it's still not a bad thing.
Even if they're not too willing to share with you, just watch.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch and learn from that. Because to me, I was watching some of the videos today because, you know, when you're trying to do the translation after I learned how, it's like, Ruth, you got to watch the presentation. But, you know, you were busy doing the chatting on that because there were people that now could ask me questions. And, you know, I'll do that at the end, kind of my thoughts about how something like this should be done that I think that I would have enjoyed a lot more.
Right.
Okay. So the third person is, he's from Poland. And you said,
Piotr.
Yeah, okay. He's a teacher. Okay. The name of his project is Kinder, K-I-N-D-E-R, volleyball. He's an experienced and, oh my goodness, a passionate PET. And I thought I had energy. This guy, he was younger than me, so I guess he better have more energy. But he's a mini volleyball coach, and he's the author of Kinder Volleyball. And in Poland, and that's where Krzysztof is, who right. actually organized this event. But he did hula hoops, bouncing balls, tossing, catching against the wall. He did elementary school size, all kinds of balls, the little balls, the balloons. I just went, then he got them all together. And at the end, they played in this major event. I mean, they marched in, they registered, and they played one-on-one, they played two-on-two, they had mixed, and it was something that I never had been exposed to. And I think, okay, after being exposed to him, would I change what I do? Not in teaching, because they really didn't talk about fundamentals much, okay? But I would probably, as I started in March, I added like a third part of my program. Actually, my regular program goes 8 weeks. At the beginning, I added an intro the first day that you got to experience it, because it felt like an introduction in a classroom. A lot of people don't get to experiment with it, right?
Right, right.
And especially a parent that's out of shape and they didn't realize they needed to jump rope, right? So I started a third part, and I only got two of them done in March before COVID. And it was teaching the strategies of the game. and in game-like situations, all right? So my thought in that was we divided the court up into threes, okay? We had a parent and a kid, a parent and a kid, you know? So we got three parents on one side, three kids on one side mm-hmm. with the antennas. So the parents can't pass, they can't hit, they only can catch and toss because right. the program is geared toward the kids. So I was thinking in my mind, would I change what I saw with them? I would probably, I never got to finish my other four sessions. So yeah. we were learning the lines. We were learning why do you call an antenna a pin? You know, so at least when they heard that, they needed to know the tape. They needed to know, they already knew all the names of the lines. Mm-hmm. But when you make a smaller court, they need to recognize what balls are in and out. So yeah. my thought is that I would move that part of the program. Now, let me tell you, it doesn't change BYOP. But what it does is, and this is what was happening, the kids were still coming back and they were playing league play, right?
Sure.
They were not being taught where to stand, what to do, what counts, except they knew when a ball went over the net and they didn't get it back, they got a point. Or someone served it in the net and they got a point. They didn't know exactly how many points because points are different when they watch it on TV, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So my thought was, is I was already going to go, I had four more sessions when COVID happened, and it was just, it was great on internet to do home training program and teach the skills, mm-hmm. but to teach the concepts, oh, you're talking about one girl ran on her scooter over to her friend's house during the time I was getting ready to start the session. And I go, hey, Caroline, you're in BYOP. And then one parent is moving a car so they can, I mean, so there was too much that were going on.
Distractions.
That I felt, yeah. oh yeah, that I felt like four times a concert. Oh no, listen, I hate. I know not to do 16 people, families at one time.
Yeah.
So my thought was, is now that I see that, I will probably do a little bit more of that, but I'll still maintain the parent and the kid. Now, I did do at the end of each session up until now, like this is 7 years now, I did like the last 5 minutes where they could do 4-on-4 and the parents mm-hmm. still had to catch it and do that so they can kind of learn the concept. But sure. I changed it so I actually made separate dates so it didn't conflict with our 8-week program of where we test on 4 weeks in. We test how they're passing, they're serving, all the skills. And then right. at the end, we have like a little skills contest or a play day.
Right.
But I will definitely, I'm convinced that I will definitely do a little bit more after watching his session.
Okay. Good. See? You teach and you learn.
Oh, John, I'm a life learner. Okay, now. This was an interesting, the next one was an Italian, Stefano Bardini. Is that correct? B-A-R-D-I-N-I, Bardini?
Seems like it.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going with it.
Oh my goodness. He's an Italian teacher and a volleyball coach, and he does volleyball training and he coaches in the pro league. He went into a theory of everything in teaching philosophy and training and age group, and he started with the youngest age group and started them on a trampoline and, you know, moved them into, you know, the bouncing the balls and then watched them with the big ball and then went and jumped into middle school and then went into high school and then went into the pros. And his was so much theory. Okay. Polish coach. Oh my goodness. All the kids draw all the drills. Krzysztof doing all the drills with him. Rimco doing, you know, different time. And me, if I had to do it all over again, I would have shown more videos. Because, you know, it's like you don't really know until someone tells you.
Right.
Or you see it. And I think that now to do something for, you know, whether it's the Belgium event or the CEV event or, you know, some other events that I'm going to do, I'm going to now what I do though is I put a link that gives them 5 days after the event that they can go look on my website, that they can watch a lot of videos. Now, Emma demonstrated, but I can tell you this. Make sure if you use Zoom when you're recording, make sure you pin the person, because if they're not talking, they won't see the person. So
right.
you couldn't see her. So, you know, it's a lesson in, you know, sometimes you don't, you know, everybody does things differently and you don't like to tell them what they, you know, what they're missing or something. But I think, you know, you got to get to a point because we're all learning on.
Oh, yeah. So much of this stuff.
Right. I don't think any, I'm telling you, click the flag, go over to the 100 flags, pick the American flag to bingo. Man, I had everything in English. But I, you know, John, I think one of the takeaways I would say is that we all, like you said, we all are learning. And you know that from all the podcasts and all the conversations you do and on Master Coaches and all the things you did before with the Wizards and all that. You cannot, you would have to have your eyes closed and your ears plugged to not learn from that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just by osmosis, even if you're really not paying attention, some of it's going to slip through.
Absolutely. And I, you know, it's kind of interesting. I was, it kind of brought back the questions that Steve and Karen asked on the Buzz Reaction yesterday.
Sure.
And I thought to myself, if you can get to a point where you really feel you have, you're in an atmosphere where you can ask questions, I do believe there isn't anybody that doesn't want to learn. I think when somebody wins something like a tournament or, you know, even you might go to USA Nationals and you might win the American Division. Everybody knows anybody can enter that, right? You know, you're not selected for that, but you win a gold medal. Okay. It doesn't matter what you win because you may not be staying there for long because somebody else is trying to get to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, and I think of Andy Benikowski, all the years he was there at UCLA and all that. And they said, Ruth, well, you know, you've been at so many schools. Did you do it because you finally didn't win? So you want to go start another program? And I go, wait, I was in the Final Four. Don't tell me I didn't win. I said, some people are builders. Some people are stabilizers. Some people are creators. And some people are innovators.
Yeah.
And now we're influencers, right? Okay, right, that's right. The buzz. You know, remember when John Cook came on? Hey, that's the influencer.
That came up in my first sports marketing class yesterday.
Influencers.
Okay, influencers.
The buzzword, man.
And I talked about name, image, and likeness and how that's going to probably influence our sport moving forward. So,
yeah. Well, I can say if I had it to do over and I myself as a presenter, and then I'll say, as a participant, as a presenter, I think the pre-recorded thing shows merit because what it does is it allows a person to watch and chat. But I think it's better if that person could have watched before they went to the Congress and able to chat and ask more questions because when someone chats, it may be later in the presentation, right?
Yeah. Well, kind of like with the AVCA, where during a presentation, you could chat in most cases with the presenter.
Right.
But they also had those, what are those breakout rooms? Or not breakout rooms, not really.
Learning labs,
right, where you had an hour afterwards where you're all on Zoom and you can ask questions.
But I would rather, as a participant, I would rather have watched the video and then gone to the, you know, the Congress on Sunday, and I would have already watched it. I would have already thought about it, and I would have asked different questions.
Sure.
Because what happens when you leave a session? What's the first thing? You're a participant. What's the first thing you think after you left?
Probably, what's my next session?
No.
Moving on.
What question should you have asked and you wanted to ask, right?
Yeah.
So I like that. But for me, you know, it was harder for me to pre-record than to be live.
Okay.
Because it's like, now I like in person too, but I can tell you live, like what we're doing, there really is, you can interact if you get a chance to interact. But when you've got 80 people
Yeah.
It really changes the flow of your presentation.
Right.
So right. I really think, now, when you got a chance now, so they get to actually view it for 30 more days. They actually get to view like 20 of my videos for like 3 or 4 more days. Mm-hmm. And I already have from that event 10 people that I'm already communicating with, besides the people that presented with me.
Right, right.
That's critical for all young coaches.
Yeah, it is.
You know what? We used to have to do it by fax machine. So tell me.
Or Gaspar by telephone.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And you know what? It's funny because Christoph, he had sent me a thanking me for, you know, because I said it was really great to meet him. Mm. And I sent it at midnight and it was 6 o'clock there and he was up and responding with it. So, I mean, you can write anything anytime you want. And then the person gets it when they wake up or the next day or whatever.
Yep. Exactly.
But it was one of the most fun times I've ever had in a long time.
Nice. That's good. So you've now expanded your reach beyond Latin America because you've been all over Latin America lately.
Right.
And now you're getting into Europe.
Yep.
So now we just got to get you, our buddy Shihab.
Yep.
To get you doing stuff in the Middle East and maybe North
Egypt.
Africa.
Yep.
Yep. And then you must know somebody in the Pacific.
Oh, I am.
Japan,
they're on my
China
list.
And all that.
but really, even with Marco I talked to Marco at least 3-4 times a week on Messenger. Cause now I put Messenger on my computer and I can mm-hmm. work and I can talk at the same time.
Yep.
So I like that. And then Argentina and then, you know, doing stuff with Noelle and that, but I can tell you that if people really care to learn, it's almost like we talked about this, you know, with the whole issues of Black Lives Matter and everything. Someone asked me one time, Ruth, are you going to make a statement? I said, I've been making a statement my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to make a statement, but let me say this. I think if someone wants to learn the Black culture and recognize that, I mean, Rose said she picked cotton in high school to make extra money. And we learned that because we talk when we would walk our mile and we came up with, you got to ask 5 or 6 questions every single time we walked and you got to tell something about yourself that the other person doesn't know. But you know what? The bottom line is this, you're only as busy as you want to be. And if you have something you want to learn about and it's like what we're talking about now, if you mm-hmm. want to communicate with people, this is the easiest that it's ever been in my entire life. I see Christoph already. He's already responding to my post from Poland. But anyhow, John, I just think, you know, you've done such a wonderful job of connecting people all over the world. And to me, you know, I've really worked hard with, you know, Todos Somos to do the same thing and to have the opportunity to be exposed to people. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of people, John, like us that like to share, you know, and it's not what you do. I don't like it's what you do is great. It doesn't matter what my opinion is. I don't have to agree with you, you know, on everything. And you know what? The fun thing about it is it's fun to be able to talk about what each of us think because that's the only way you learn. I mean, to me, I think that you get the most important thing is don't get stuck as a volleyball coach and only be a volleyball coach.
Right.
Expand your knowledge to many things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether if you're in coaching, it's in marketing. If you're in coaching, it's dealing with parents and how is the best way that you can gauge parents without you being upset or them being upset.
Right.
And, you know, cause it's like, Dave Rigolo, the one that does my podcast. I heard him I listened to it every single time it comes up. And one of the things he said, you know, I didn't plan on doing 22 podcasts with Ruth, but I have a list of them that I'm doing. And I said, Dave, I didn't really mean to do that. And he said, well, no. He said, it's been so exciting. I never thought I'd be talking to Olympians or, you know, talking with Kathy DeBoer with the, you know, the AVCA and Sandy and with USA Volleyball. And he said, those are things that I never would have even dreamed that I would do.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. I think just exposing people to, you know, all those kind of things is, I love it, you know?
Yeah,
you have to love what you do.
And it's a lot of fun to get yourself into new situations. I mean, like when we arranged for Danielle Scott, for those
lifetime Olympian, yep. I forget.
When we arranged for her to come to Midwestern to do that talk when we were fundraising for the trip to Buenos Aires, which was part of another set of contacts that I had developed before that. The vast majority of the stuff that I do these days is the result of connections that were developed by other stuff that I had done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like my trip that I mentioned before to Europe, 2 months, I was 13 countries or something, some crazy stuff. You know, I look back on it, it must have been out of my mind. But, I mean, that's more people I'm connected to, more things that I've seen and been exposed to and can talk about and share with people, and more people that, hey, I used to play there, or I know a coach from there. It's a really small, especially the volleyball world, is surprisingly small. You know, the whole 6 degrees of separation, it's more like 3 in volleyball. Because you always know somebody who knows somebody.
But you know what? I think it's also important for young coaches, and even some coaches that are in the 30s and 40s, I consider everything under me is young, so everybody's young. One of the things is there's a difference between building relationships and nurturing those relationships over years. Because, you know, I may have a couple people that call me that I know they're calling me because they need something. Okay. Right. But I know that. But don't just call on people just because you need something. You know, develop a relationship with people, because I do believe that people are sincere. And I believe that there are enough people out there that really do care.
Right.
But don't utilize, and the most important thing is, don't criticize those people. You know, support people. It's interesting is, I never agreed with everything Dr. Ari Solinger said, everything. Mm-hmm. But I am humbled to the moment. As a matter of fact, we were texting back and forth this morning through WhatsApp. And I just am grateful. And he said, well, I haven't done that much for you. Yes, he did. He did more for me than he'll ever realize. Yeah. And I think that to admit, to show people some kind of appreciation, even just a thank you once in a while. No, I don't think that you need to want to expect something from somebody. I don't expect a thank you from anybody. But, you know, once in a while, boy, when someone does, it's almost like, wow.
Nice to get.
I bet their parents have trained them well. I always say now when a kid comes up and says, thank you, Coach Ruth. I go, did your mom tell you to say that? No. I just, you know, there are so many life lessons that people can learn. And it takes so little energy to say nice things about people. John, I just believe that it's easy to say nice things.
Yeah, unfortunately, these days it seems like it's easy to say bad things too, and that's what's happening.
When you get, and I'm going to tell you this because I know you're not there, when you get over age 50, okay, these are the things that you're going to need to do. One, you're going to begin to surround yourself with only positive people, and surround yourself with people that are supportive. Because I'm going to tell you, I began to do that, and I began to do something that I don't think I ever did through my first 30 or 40 years when I was so actively involved in volleyball. I didn't know how to say no.
Yeah. That's a learned skill. It is definitely a learned skill.
But you know, when I say no now, I think even after I said no, and maybe it's on Zoom, and I say no, and I go end session or leave, I go, maybe there's something I could do. And then I go, Ruth, you do not have 48 hours in the day. You have 24 and you need to sleep 8 to 10.
Yep. Well, it's like, it's like Beth Lanier kind of talks about in her book.
Yeah.
With the delegation, and you need to know, okay, that no, I shouldn't be doing that. Whether it's something that you just doesn't need to get done, or somebody else needs to do it and not you.
Well, when you're young, and I can say from going from George Williams to Houston to LSU to Iowa, I never had staff at George Williams or Houston. I did have a graduate assistant and a part-time assistant at LSU, and then I had full-time people at Iowa. I think one is the hardest thing is learning to delegate if you've never had people to delegate to. But however, I think that if you have a lot of people, you learn to delegate, but you don't really learn all the facets of the program. Whereas we had to learn all the facets of the program. We had to fundraise. We had to do this. We had to do the buses. We had to do this. We had to do thank you. I think I learned how to type. I learned how to do this. I know how to do this. I know how to type on the. I mean, there's a lot of things that are positive both ways. But I think one of the things that was the hardest thing that I learned, and I learned it when I went from LSU to the pros, is my general manager, and I told you this in the Wizard interview, Gary Carroll said, you do everything you need to do in training. And when the game comes, it's game time and it's showtime. Yeah. You be energetic and you do all that. And even some of my LSU players that played for me, they go, why weren't you like this when you were at LSU? I said, you know why? Because I didn't have somebody like a Gary Carroll telling me why it was valuable.
Right.
So how many of these, I mean, everybody does something, you know, you do a drill because somebody else, you see them do a drill, but you don't even know how they created the drill.
Mm-hmm.
So no one, and you're not doing the drill like they did the drill because you don't necessarily understand the drill.
Right.
So to me is learn from it and just recognize that it's okay not to do like I was LSU. I'm not going to do what Andy Banikowski does at UCLA because my players are different. However, he was the first one to ever use, it was called blue defense. I named it after he did, offside blocker goes get the tip.
Right.
We had red, we had white, we had, you know, then Rover came around and rotation came around. But he was the first one that really utilized that. But I said, okay, now I want to utilize it, but I don't want that player to hurry up and get outside and then have to set them. I'm going to run my offense and stack it to the right. I tried to explain that to a D1 coach that 2 years ago, and they go, Ruth, that doesn't make sense. Why, now you're going to have everybody over here. And I go, never mind. You know, it's like if someone's not willing to listen to the concept, you know, and hey, when you get at kids, I can tell you I'm a much better teacher, John, than I was 20 years ago. And I'm a better teacher than I was in March before COVID. Right.
There you go.
Because of the, you know, all the internet stuff.
Forced adaptation.
Hey, oh yeah. And you forced me to be tech savvy on Zoom.
That works both ways. We force each other. We're like, how do we do that?
Yeah, that's exactly. You know, and I was thinking, oh no, yesterday when it didn't go up on the site, and I just went, oh no, the outro, it's not playing. And then I went to another click, and I went to another. I realized that I had posted an intro by itself for 41 seconds, and it wasn't. And I was going to go, and that's when I called you, and you didn't pick up. Oh my goodness, John, I really appreciate you having me on and to talk about this because. This was really a wonderful experience for me doing this with Christoph and the guys. You know, I always end up with the guys. I'm with the guys on Master Coaches.
I was going to make an observation. I'm like, I don't see any women in those pictures.
No, there wasn't.
For those of you who are on or not on YouTube watching this,
All right,
you mentioned that this is available to the people who are attendees.
That's right.
You said for another few days.
Yeah.
Is any of it generally available on YouTube or whatever? No. Okay.
No, but you know what? I've been emailing Christoph and said, you know, after the 30 days, you ought to make something public because I'm going to tell you that anybody that's working at, you know, 10 and under or in the school system, Mm-hmm. You only learn from that stuff.
Yeah.
But I will also say something to him again, since he posted while we were on. That's the danger of Zoom, and you have Messenger. I put it on my desktop. It's dangerous.
Well, there it is. It's there all the time.
But now. I do. I appreciate being for me to be able to explain, and it's great to be able to give all of those, you know, guys and also Christoph an opportunity to what they've done and created, and it being the only thing that was really open to anybody in five languages, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way that's coming around for literally anybody to be involved in these things is awesome. But definitely thanks for letting people know about all this stuff and what's developing and becoming possible for all of us.
Now they do. They can go on mini volley, Volleyball Academy, YouTube, and they can see some of the preliminary stuff that we did prior to the Volley Congress. And you know what? I would say this. If anyone's interested, I would just email them off their, and message them off their website, Volleyball Academy. _PL. And, Facebook, they're on Twitter, they're on Instagram. And then they have a YouTube channel that is public that people can see those. And you can see how you translate.
Right. Okay.
Hey, when are we going to be doing translations?
That's a good question.
Hey, do it.
We'll learn that.
I bet we could do it before I get down off of 164,000 list on COVID vaccine list.
I'm not even on the list. I'm eligible, but I don't even.
Oh, yeah, but you don't want to be on my list. For sure. All right, John, thank you.
All right. Me. Yeah, well, thanks for coming. And I apparently need to call, or my AD called while we were talking.
All right, well,
so
you
I need
go
to see what that
and
was.
I really appreciate it. You have a wonderful day, and thanks for inviting me on.
Well, thanks for coming. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes on the website, coachingvb.com. for links and further information about this episode. You'll also be able to find the complete back catalog of prior coaching conversations. While you're there, you can sign up for my mailing list. Members find out in advance what conversations I'll be doing next and can submit questions if they like. If you'd like to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/coachingvb. Patrons get early access to every episode, as well as other special benefits along the way. I'm always interested in hearing what you think about coaching conversations and ideas you might have of topics and or guests for future episodes. You can send them to me at john@coachingvb.com, tweet them to @coachingvb, or hit me up on my Facebook page, Coaching Volleyball. All the best until next time.